Welcome to Cooper Talk. I'm your host, Steve Cooper. Remember, I'm only as hip as my guests. And today, you know, I had a different guest, and this gentleman was so nice to come. This happened before when Darren Carter came in a few weeks. I have a radio personality, actually.
Yeah,
a guy who's been doing radio longer than me, so if I sound like an ass, blame him. He's the man down there in Baltimore at 98 Rock.
It's WYYY98online.com.
So people, just listen. Like, today, you're listening to Cooper Talk.
Yeah.
But usually, you're there from...
It's a 7 to midnight show, Monday through Friday.
Okay, so it's out here, they get it at
So out here, it would be 4 to 9.
Okay, so people, so after you listen to Cooper Talk,
listen to Cooper Talk
to 6,
first.
Then
get
you listen
the
to
good stuff out the way.
Every day, listen to him. And he's also a very funny comic. He tours with the very funny Harlan Williams. He's an actor. He's a writer. He's got a great website. I like the opening of your website.
Thank you.
And I haven't even said your name. It's Justin Schlegel.
Is it Schlegel or Schlegel? Now, here's the thing. You are one of 100 people to properly say my name. Over the course of the year, I've actually gone with my middle name, which is Daniels.
Yeah, that was on Facebook. You changed
it. It's Justin Ian Daniels. Ian's my brother's middle name. Daniels is my middle name. And the reason is because Schlegel is so butchered verbally, spelling-wise. Schlegel. I'm telling you, you are an anomaly saying
it perfectly. You know what's funny? On my phone, because I always see how your name is spelled S-C-H-L-E.
L-E, exactly.
But see, because I want to see what I put.
You spell it with an A, maybe, like L-A.
Or I put an A in there. I put it like George Siegel, but Schlegel.
But that's still close. You have no idea how wretchedly it gets butchered. Like Schneigel, Schnarlstein, Schlegelbaum.
That's funny.
Thomas.
It looks like, I can see someone saying Schlegel.
I could see a Schlegel. Like, Schlegel was a common mispronunciation, but you have no idea how butchered it got.
Schlegel. It looks like Schlegel.
But it's close.
I don't know why I called you Schlegel, but I think because you said it was Schlegel. I think it's because you're from back east.
Yeah, I'm from back east.
And where are you from?
I'm originally from a suburb of D.C. called Waldorf.
Waldorf.
But I spent so much time in Baltimore. I call Baltimore my home.
Now, how did you end up in Baltimore?
I ended up in Baltimore. I wanted to do radio broadcasting, and I wanted to be a comedian, and I left Waldorf in 1999.
Well, now, Waldorf, how far was Waldorf from D.C.?
20 minutes, outside of town. Like, Burbank to downtown L.A. is Waldorf to D.C.
Was, back then, was, like, Garvin's going, or was Garvin's closed by then? Like, in D.C., there used to be, probably before you started, there was a chain called Garvin's, and they had one in Alexandria, and they had one in D.C.
Was there a comedian named the Fat Doctor that used to
Yeah, the Fat
there?
Doctor.
Yeah, the Fat Doctor used to. I would go see shows. Someone told me he was sick, but I'm not sure the extent of it.
I heard someone talk about, but he's better now.
I hope so, because that guy was an institution in D.C., Virginia, Baltimore comedy.
Because I performed with him at the Carousel. Remember? Did you ever do the Carousel?
I did not,
Maryland?
No, you see, you worked some of the Golden Age rooms around there.
Yeah, fun.
I came a generation or two afterwards.
What made you want to think you wanted to do comedy?
I've wanted to do comedy since I was a kid. It was odd. I thought somehow, in some twisted way in my head, I thought that by getting into radio, I could build prominence up to where I could start to do comedy.
Really? That's funny, because most people, it's the other way. Because you're actually, and this is no offense to radio people, because now with podcasts and everything, there are very many funny comics.
Yeah.
But there's the old thing, well, you're not a morning guy, but the old thing where it's like, you would go, like, I would perform in Iowa, and you go on the morning show, and people, hey,
what's going on? This jackhammer with a pickle coming at you live.
It was always that thing where, as comics, we would feel a little resentful because these guys who would be on the, like, WMMR in Philadelphia was a big show, and there's a guy named Mark the Shark.
Okay.
And
God, that's a radio show.
I know. My name is Mark the Shark.
Hey, this is Jack Hammer.
And he was just awful. And he would just come on stage, and he'd be like, and I think he was telling us who worked the door, can you tell the people to laugh? And we're like, no, that's your job. But we hated it because he'd be getting paid good I understand.
Because he was a local draw.
Right, he's a draw.
Yeah.
But the room was packed anyway. But then he would go on, and he would just suck. And we'd be like, man, this is crap. Because usually it's the other way. It's like people, that's funny that you went on the, dude, that is just, that's totally
different. It's weird how that worked out.
Because it worked out. Because most people, I mean, you got on the radio, but then.
Well, here's how it worked out. It's weird how it did, because it didn't work out how I thought it was going to. I thought I was going to get into radio, get a show, get a larger show, build up prominence like this Mark the Shark character like you described.
Right.
And then start doing shows, and then ta-da. What happened is I worked for CBS Radio back when they were Infinity, and the station I was at kept changing format every year. They'd go from hot talk to pop to rock.
Now, you had your own show.
I was trying to get my own show, but I was doing, like, board op work, writing, promotion stuff. I was working in radio. I would maybe get a week weekend gig thrown to me okay. now and then, or a fill-in. And every time it would change, they would fire the whole staff, wow. but keep me because I made $7 an hour.
Right, like, and you were just you knew what to do.
They were like, hey, keep, like, me and two other people they'd keep. And like we'd
the janitor.
The janitor, the technician, and myself, and we'd do eight-hour shifts.
Well, why would they sit there and constantly change? See, it's like to me, it's
impatience, man.
It's like TV, you know. It's like next week this guy Mo Mandel is gonna be on the show, and he was on the show Free Agents, mm-hmm. which was good. I mean, it had Hank Azaria, and NBC gives it like 3 weeks.
Yeah, they don't give it enough time to gestate and succeed.
You already put money into it.
Exactly.
You know, I'm sure these guys that came in and did the talk or the it's just weird to go from talk to
it was unsettling.
Music to
they'd go from like hardcore hip hop to metal. And I mean, you want to talk about two different ends of the spectrum.
You hear one thing, F the police next day, John Wade, I'll be missing you. And you're like, what the hell is this?
You have no idea how freaked out we got. I would work as the overnight producer for the hip hop station and help run the morning show. And then one day I come in, no one's in, all the CDs are like cleanly labeled, but they didn't have like Jay-Z on the CD, or they didn't have, you know, Puff Daddy. It would just be like 8794-2.
Would they just go, but they wouldn't go quiet? I mean, what would they do in the transition time? I mean, they had to know they were laying the groundwork. Would they tell the people they're getting fired?
Or they would sometimes, literally, it was so scary the way they would do it. It was such a sudden, absolute, they would kill your key card access. They would send out emails. And what happened with me is they point out these CDs, they weren't labeled by the artist. You would see a log and like play CD 8504. And okay, I knew that used to be a Jay-Z CD, but I grabbed it, would put it in. All of a sudden you hear GNR's Welcome to the Jungle. And you're like, what the hell is
happening?
But
who's talking? Is there someone in there talking?
None. What they usually do is for the first month or so of the transition, they would go jockless. And they'd go all music and then slowly phase in fresh jocks.
So do they have like a track that says, hey, this is such and such. I mean, how do they do? I mean,
it literally went, it was so sudden that we played, I think we played like Jodeci, Busta Rhymes, we played a sweeper. You're listening to 97.5 The Edge.
I have one of those things. You call it a sweeper. What do we call it?
Sweepers, bumpers, stops.
Yeah.
It's all the same thing.
I never play them.
And you throw, in the next CD and cue it up, and then Welcome to the Jungle starts
playing.
You're
doing everything.
Yeah, at the time when I was there, this was in early 2000s, it was still CDs, carts, there was a little computer automation, but for the most part, you were still playing physical media. These days, everything's all in an audio vault. There's no actual CD or
okay, anything. I don't know, because, I mean, people just know the place I record out of, it's basically, it's iTunes. My songs are on iTunes, but I don't really play songs, so
yeah,
I don't need the
talk.
iTunes.
You get to just be
great. I have to play a song, just because it breaks it up, and, you know, people get tired of my voice. But it just went from... Okay, so now you're working at the station. You're the guy doing the board, putting the stuff in. You're basically running the show.
I'm the grunt guy.
But you're running the show.
I'm running the show. It's me, and there was two other guys that did the same thing that I did, and they basically split us up in 8-hour shifts. So three guys working 8 hours a piece, 7 days a week. And what had happened, and then eventually new jocks would come in, the station would get a new identity, and you'd think that would be it. A year later, all of a sudden, the rock station was blown out. Everybody gone, and it was a talk station out of nowhere. And then again, I'm the producer.
And that's weird to go from music to talk. That's a really big... That's a big difference. It's not like, you know, people... I mean, I can see going maybe from changing the... Music.
Yeah, music stylings, but it's still music. No, that was actually, you make a great point. That was the oddest transition, because we went from pop to hip-hop, hip-hop to rock, and some people stuck around between music changes, but then when you just did away with music, and it was, I think we simulcast Stern, then Penn Jillette had a show for a while, and they were all feeds. There was nobody local. Everything was syndicated. There was nobody in the building anymore.
Okay, so it's
and
just, okay.
It was all syndicated programming. Don and Mike, G. Gordon Liddy, all that. And then it happened.
It's funny to hear Stern and G. Gordon Liddy.
It was so weird.
It's like, wait a second.
It didn't even make sense to line up.
Like, wait, Howard Stern followed by G. Gordon Liddy and later Pat Boone.
Yeah, exactly.
It's so out there. But
George Norrie, Coast to Coast. But then finally they did it again, and they flipped it to sports talk, and I quit. I couldn't do it anymore, because every time I would start to achieve some prominence and like, okay, maybe I'm going to become producer.
Oh, then they knock you down.
Then every time I was just hitting Control-Alt-Delete on my career, and I go right to the bottom rung again.
Okay.
So I quit. That night, I go to a place called Frazier's on the Avenue in Baltimore. There's a karaoke night. I get hammered, and I mean S-house, fall down hammered. Well, I mean, I was I'm just joking. I'd just given up my career. I was like, I'm done. There was a karaoke night. I signed up to sing Lionel Richie's Hello. I had no intention of singing.
Because especially that song. You know, I always hate about that song. This is God's honest truth.
Please.
I hated about that song is the damn video, because he's sitting there. He's sitting in the class
with the blind chick.
Yeah, and first of all, I'm sorry, but if I'm paying money to see take a class, I don't want to see Lionel Richie singing to a blind chick.
Yeah.
And she makes a thing that looks like him. She cracks this nice thing. It looks like Lionel Richie has mumps.
Yeah.
It doesn't even look like it. It's like he got
scurvy.
Punched in the jaw. Yeah, it's
That's
like
so funny.
And I sit there, and he's sitting there, but he always says, hello. And they're like, Mr. Richie, come on. And it's like, he's all, and it's like, hey, Lionel, I just paid $400 for for sculpturing. Don't sing to the girl.
I paid for
these
three credits.
She's still got the goddamn kill.
That's so funny. No one ever thought about the other students in the room.
She's
getting all the attention paid to her. Great, she's got a great ass, but she can't sing.
Yeah, she's cute, but it's like she can't see him, so it's like she doesn't know what he looks like.
Real creepy, Richie, taking advantage of the blind chick. That's really scurvy.
Well, that's
okay.
It
all fell apart. I go up to sing, and I start drunkenly flipping out on the mic about quitting and how awful CBS radio was, and some people start to laugh. And it was like the first slight little teaspoon of what it felt like to be on stage.
You had never
with
done,
mic.
You'd never,
I'd never done
any
stand-up yet.
But you
no.
wanted to.
I had wanted to, and I had written some for morning shows. I had written some for other like local comics and stuff. It was butchered. It never worked out well. And the guy, he body slams me off stage. I mean, he just tackles me off stage.
Because it was karaoke.
It's karaoke. He takes it so seriously.
I know, that's funny. It's like out here, it's like Dimples in Burbank. Now, where do you live? You live in Hollywood, right?
I live in Burbank, right down the street.
Okay. Well, because I live right down, but Dimples in Burbank, it always cracks up, because you go in there, first of all, it's like they sit there. I mean, and I've been to karaoke like in Hollywood, where there used to be an Acapulco on La Brea, and those people were good, but they didn't take it too serious. Dimples, these people think they're going to be like an American Idol.
Yeah, they think it's the next X Factor.
Serious, and it's like it's karaoke.
Yeah,
you're doing karaoke in a bar owned by a perverted old owner whose happiness is giving girls blowjob shots on their birthday and give them a thong that says Dimples.
Yeah, dig in. This is a culmination in your life.
So they threw you off.
They threw me off, and the guy was like,
"We were getting laughs.
But I was getting like light chuckles. I'm not saying I was killing or anything like that.
Hammered.
I was destroyed.
What were you drinking?
No, I think my friend was making me Jack and water. He was just straight Jack and water.
Here you go with a splash.
Yeah, just a little splash to color it. And he's like, if you want to pull that comedy crap, you come back here on Sundays when that other ass does his open mic thing.
Who is
you don't do
ass?
It. I don't even remember the guy's name at the time. But he's like, you don't do it during my karaoke night, all right? You sing here. You do that comedy crap on Sundays. So I came back Sunday. I went up again, ate it.
Did you have an act written?
I scripted some stuff out. And I mean, I almost read it verbatim before I scripted. I had 2 minutes maybe.
I remember the first time I ever went on stage, and I had taken this learning annex class, and they basically got me how to do... Just got me to do an act.
Yeah.
And I remember practicing in front of the mirror, man. And, you know,
I did that
and you
too,
have your
yeah.
five, you're practicing and you're yeah. practicing, you got your 5 minutes. And then I went up and I actually did okay. And of course, I mean, in Philadelphia, which we'll talk later about, you worked at the Comedy Factory Outlet in Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
They used to be related. Well, that's where I started out, the Comedy Factory Outlet in Philadelphia. At the time, it was owned by Clay Heery. And you would pull your name out of the hat. So I went on like 18th. And back then, it was like, there'd be like 26 acts.
A lot of people.
But everyone would go on. And that's what was cool. You know, and you could tell the people who wanted to do it, because they would sit there and they would stay. They would stay, and you go in front of three people. And one comic, this guy George Sharp, told me, he goes, "Don't leave. Just get on stage." He goes, "Because then you can say you got on stage." And I went up and I had an okay set.
That's so cool for you to say, because you bring up a good point. I want to talk about something that you said. You went to the mic. There was a stack of people there.
Yeah,
18 to 26
and you
people.
Out a hat, so you knew when you were going on.
You knew when you were going up, but you knew there was a ton of people, but you stayed.
Exactly.
Do you notice that's gone away in comedy? Because I remember when I first started, when you did an open mic or you did a local showcase with like 15 people, if you performed, whether it was first or 15th, you stayed for the whole thing.
Right.
To be an audience member, to at least contribute to the night.
Or you'd also, you know, and the funny thing also is though, you would stay, but you would you'd hang out in the bar section. There was a different camaraderie. You would go
out.
But the difference then was though, the Comedy Factory Outlet and the Comedy Works, in their open mic nights, because it was a boom of comedy, I mean, there were 60 people in the audience. So you always had a good audience.
You still had an audience.
As it got later, of course, it would dwindle. But I went on my first time, and I had a good set, I mean, for being my first time.
Yeah.
So you get a little cocky. I'm young.
I'm killing it.
Next night, I just eat it. And I used to always laugh, and it was such a humbling experience. I didn't go back for 2 weeks. And then some guy, comic, that same guy, George Sharp, said, why didn't you come back? I said, nah, because I ate it. And he goes, dude, he goes, you're going to eat it. He goes, and I go, yeah, I just get too nervous. And he said, at one point in your career, he goes, you won't be nervous when you go on stage anymore. And I'm like, yeah, whatever. And you get to that point where it's different. You're not nervous. You're more anxious.
Yeah, that's it. It's
you
a, that's
you
a great point.
Get on stage. You're like, let me get on stage. You're it's a nerve. You turn that nervousness into anxiousness.
Yeah, it's not a fear. It's an anxiousness. You're just like, okay, let's get this. Get me up there now. Come on, hurry up with the introduction. Let me get on so
right.
I can get past this. Yeah, the nervousness does go away. You don't get the butterflies anymore.
So you did the open mic and you ate it.
I ate it for weeks. I met a comic there, a great guy named Frank Hong, who's like, hey, you know, some of your stuff, it could be funny. Come back.
Wait,
on.
This was in Baltimore.
This is in Baltimore. He's like, well, there's another place in Bowie, which wasn't far from Baltimore.
I know that. I know all those towns.
Yeah, Chip Bowie, Franklin, Baltimore. Chip Franklin used to book a bunch of one-nighters
stuff,
there.
Yeah, I remember.
And he's like, go to this restaurant. I can't remember. I think it was like Felicity is on Tuesday nights.
How about you ever do Griff's in Frederick?
No, but I heard of Griff's in Frederick.
It's
I heard.
I, crabs.
Did you ever do Kaufman's? In Elkridge. It was like a seafood restaurant.
No.
Where they never told anybody that was eating that there was going to be an open mic night.
Oh, so, that's always great.
So right in the middle of some blue and gray surf and turf platter, you get an 18-year-old kid up there doing an anal sex joke.
Emma, yeah. And I cracked this bitch in half.
Yeah.
And the bitch had a margarita, no salt.
So I was smacking this girl in the forehead with my nutsack.
Yeah,
how's
exactly.
Your clam chowder? You there's World a, War II vet?
Yeah, it was terrible.
So this guy took you to where was
he
it?
He took Felicity? Me to another place. It was on Tuesdays. It was Felicity. A restaurant called Felicity.
Oh, by,
or something.
Kerry Hoffman. No, whatever her name
no,
is. Joking.
No idea.
What was her name? Kerry Russell.
Kerry
that
Russell.
That was a dumb joke. Felicity, the Kerry Russell place.
The Kerry Russell clam chowder bar.
I own. Oh, yeah.
And then Thursdays, I met somebody at Felicity's that introduced me to a place on Thursdays called Topaz. And all of a sudden, one night turned into two turned into three.
And these were all open mics.
These were open mics.
Were there a lot of comics going out?
Yeah, there was plenty. DC Baltimore had a really
great comic base.
It was a good scene. And there was, yeah, all of a sudden, you know, you find yourself going up once, twice, three. And then five and seven times.
Lionel Richie's.
And you start all of a sudden finding yourself going up every night, and then a few weeks into it, you're not completely eating it anymore.
Right.
And starting to get some, you start picking out a few nuggets that you've written. You're like, okay, I'm going to not throw this joke away. I'm actually going to foster it and see if I can turn it into something.
Right.
And then 6 months later, you've got 5 minutes that you're not embarrassed
well, see,
to do.
You know, it's funny. I'm glad you say that also, because you're being honest, and we used to run into comics, and you still run into them. Guys like, yeah, I got 30.
No,
you don't. You know, and I always tell people, I mean, you know, and then when you're young, okay, when you're starting out, you think that, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, for me, my problem is, I guess I used to doing 7-minute sets. I mean,
yeah.
I did some old farts, funny and flappers last week, and they had me. The guy had me close. It was a 5 o'clock show. I thought it was gonna be all old people. I'm like, great, I can't even eat the ARP, but I got to do this show.
Yeah,
and I did 25, and I haven't done 25 forever. And the thing is, I mean, I have so much material. Even though I was at it for a long time, a lot of material is still relevant.
Yeah.
So if I sat down and actually practiced my act and actually wrote it out, because it's 7 minutes, I don't even know what I'm gonna do. I just go up and do it. I could do 40 minutes, but that's also I was doing it for years, but these guys now they're like, oh yeah, I got 30 minutes. Yeah, until you go up and you're sucking ass,
yeah.
And the crowd hates you, and then that 30 minutes turns into 8 minutes because you don't know what to do, and then all of a sudden you start stumbling. But at least you say, okay, so you crafted it.
It was years before I had a feature set. I remember.
No, you still don't. No, joke.
Oh, like knives, Cooper. Words like knives.
You close at CFO in Baltimore, don't you?
I closed the Comedy Factory, but I mean, it's only been the past. I've been doing comedy about 8 years, so it's not been a long time. But I mean, it's only been in the past year or two that I now have like a 40-45 minute set that I will go and
I'm
comfortable with, and but still not even a ton of it I like. Like I would say I have 40 or 45 minutes that I can do to close and we'll get laughs. I'd say 20 of which I'm really proud of, and there's some other stuff that I need to let go and move on from.
It's hard to go. I think it's hard sometimes because but it's funny is what I like is, and now that I'm back into it, you know, I have to go over my taste. But if people, I mean, I talk to guys on Facebook, old comics, and they'll remember bits that I don't even remember.
Yeah.
You know, because I would always change my act up. But I like to sit there. I have to go back and look at some of my old tapes from when I started. And, of course, looking at old tapes is
you can't even do it.
But I just get the material because it's so funny. There's probably so many hidden gems from when we started out, like both me and you.
Yeah.
But we just didn't know how to deliver them. And we didn't have the... We had no timing. And it's like, I mean, I sit there. I mean, I do some bits. I mean, the Jerry Lewis Lady bit I do. Everyone knows that bit. I did that years ago. And now people love it. I'm like, it's such a stupid bit. But I'm sure there's bits that you have to do that you probably think are stupid.
That are dumb.
Like, hey, Schlegel, do that bit.
Yeah, there's a couple of bits I have a bit about hitting a deer with my car. That's a real thing back east because there's such a heavy-duty deer population.
Oh, yeah. I almost got hit a deer coming back from a gig in Youngstown, Ohio. Route 80. I'm doing 70. And it's like they mess with you. They run out and they stop for 1 second and they look at you and you slam on the brakes and they know they're not going to get hit. And then they just take off and you sit there, you just tremble. I mean,
your body's fully cold and you screech tires and you have to sit there in the road catching your breath. Like, okay, that was a mortal moment. Like,
I almost,
you know, what's the worst is I've done a couple of tours in Canada where you don't run into deer, you run into friggin' moose, which are like 900 pounds. You hit a moose, you're with the angels that night.
You know what I heard about moose? This is no lie.
Okay.
That moose, because I have some friends. First of all, I have a friend from Norway, and he has a birthmark that looks like a scar. And we're in reggae in a river, and people are like, hey, man, what happened to your face? Which is the rudest thing to do.
Yeah,
and he always tells him, over in Norway, I was saving these kids from this moose was attacking them. Like, oh, okay. But then he tells me there's no moose in Norway, so the joke's on them. But the moose are like one of the fastest animals. Like, never get, but they can only run for like so much and then they die from a heart attack, but when they run they're fast as hell and you would never think that.
I bet. Well, it's surprising to hear that because the things, they're the size of Ford F-350s.
Right.
I remember the first time it was funny, I went and did a tour there. The first time I did a tour there was 2 years ago, and I saw it was the Yuk Yuks chain, which essentially is from Saskatchewan all the way to Vancouver, and they would center you in Calgary and then they would send you to Edmonton and back, Calgary and back, Kelowna and back, and you do it for like 8 weeks.
Didn't Yuk Yuks also have one in Hamilton?
They might have. I didn't work there. Okay. But the first time I was there, I saw what looked like a Hyundai Accent that looks like somebody had hit it with an RPG. I mean, the front of this thing looks, if you'd have told me you'd driven into a wall at 60 miles an hour, I'd have believed you.
Really?
And someone was like, oh, yeah, look at all the chunks of fur and blood on the front of that thing. Guy hit a moose. And I looked at him with an odd glare, like, what are you talking about? He's like, oh, man, in the Northern Territories or in Saskatchewan, there's these moose out there that are so effing large that if you hit that in a car, your car will disintegrate, and that thing might break its leg on.
God.
I mean, trucks will just crumple into nothing.
I feel bad for a guy who, like, hit a cow. Wouldn't that be embarrassing if you hit it? Like, I'd be, like, so lame.
Could you
hit a cow, like, in your car? Could anyone do that? Or the reflex?
Cows seem real soft and doughy, though. Like, it would just pop like a balloon.
Slow. Like, you know, it'd be like, you'd see it.
See that coming. Like, a deer jumps out.
It would walk very slow.
Like a gentle trot. I could see that coming.
If anyone ever hit during a cow out there, you're an idiot.
Yeah, you deserve to hit that. If you have any sort of physical abnormality now, that's your fault. Exactly. That's not the cow.
So you're doing this open mic, and you're getting your stime. You're doing Felicities.
You're doing
by Kerry Russell.
Felicities for Kerry Russell.
Okay, and now you're getting your time together. So then you get 5 minutes now or 10. Now, when do you start branching and trying to get some work? I mean, do you sit there and go, okay.
I remember my first actual, like, hey, come and work was a place called Jillian's in Arundel Mills, Maryland. It was like a year and a half after I started. And it was Jillian's, which is now Dave and Buster's.
Okay.
But it's a big mall.
Jillian's, a big, yeah.
It's
big,
like that big adult arcade
right,
thing.
Right, yeah. They said that one in City Walk.
Yeah, exactly. There was a chain of them, and I think Dave and Buster's took them over. But they had an open mic there. That was one of those venues you're familiar with where they had an open mic on a Tuesday, but book shows on the weekend type thing, to where maybe the booker might hang out and watch the open mic and then snatch somebody aside and be like, hey, you were funny. Do you want to come by and do a guest set this weekend? And maybe if you do well in the guest set, down the line, I'll MC you.
Right, right.
That's exactly what happened.
Because the format was three acts, and MC doing 15 to 20.
Yeah, that was it.
And then headlining.
15, 25, 45 show. Maybe a guest set.
God, features are lucky now. Ours used to be 30 to 35. They only get to do 25 now.
You know what's interesting in Canada?
MC does longer, gets paid more.
The MC does longer. You start as a feature and then go to MC and then go to headliner, which I think is so smart of them.
Okay, because that means they have a strong act coming up. The MC, I heard, because I was going to do Yuk Yuks in Niagara Falls.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not in Hamilton, and then they also have one right next door in Toronto. And there was something happened with American acts coming up with some weird things. They had to cancel me. And this was years ago, but they said I was going as a feature. It was my first time through. But it makes sense because you want a strong person up front. So he does 20.
The MC sets the pace.
And then the feature does 20, and then the MC does 10 more, mm-hmm. and brings the headliner on.
I think it's genius the way they do it, because they are the audience's first impression of that night. And the way we do it here in the States is that you go from open mic to MCing, and then MC to feature right. headliner. But the thing is, that MC, the guy that's the audience's first impression of the show, might be a cat that's only been doing it 8-9 months, super nervous,
yeah.
might not have his set all organized and ready to go.
Gets a heckler, and he's lost.
Oh, he's done.
He's done. He checks out.
He's a heckler.
And then the feature's got to go on after and clean up, and then maybe the headliner doesn't have a good set.
Yeah, it's crazy. But okay, well, what were we talking about?
We're just talking about just the way I would get first paid gig with Jillian's.
It was Jillian's. So that was, you went in as a
MC.
Okay.
I MC'd that night.
Had you already started hitting like Comedy Factory out in Baltimore or any of them?
No, I had just started doing.
But did they have open mics there?
They didn't. The original owner, a woman by the name of Aurelia, that was when it was still kind of an urban room.
Lombard and Light
was an urban room.
It used to be Clay Heery, then it was a guy, Bobby, or whatever, it was a bartender, took it over, and then
I think Bobby worked alongside this woman, her name was Aurelia, okay. and that was when they were doing like their Buck of Yuck nights, Fat Doctor, you know, Cedric the Entertainer would come by before he blew up. It was a black room, it was an urban room.
Okay.
But then she sold it in the early 2000s to a guy named Matt, who runs it now, and he's actually moved it to a great new location where the Baltimore Improv was.
Okay.
Closed the old the Comedy Factory and just moved it a few blocks down. He's got an awesome new location.
Okay,
and
cool.
He took it and turned it into he started doing a contest once a year, which was it was a lighthearted bringer show to where, you know,
but it's fine. You know, you got just as long as he's putting on good weekend shows.
He's great weekend shows. So he took that and developed the club into what it is now. But when I was first starting out, he had just picked it up and was just getting that place up and running the way he wanted to. And it wasn't until like 3 years into comedy that I started doing guest sets and stuff there.
Okay. We're here with Justin Schlegel. I said it wrong.
Schlegel. You got one right.
How much is Murgatroyd? Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back. We'll be talking where Justin's going to be performing and just talking comedy. Hit me up at Cooper at 925kyhy.com. We'll be back in a few.
Yeah, it's Cooper Talk, baby. Never miss a show again. KYHY on the go. Tune in on your smartphone. Visit www.925kyhy.com and click the smartphone link.
Fairy residence, Tooth speaking. Sorry, there's no credit fairy here. What's that? He magically raises your credit score? Yeah, there's no credit fairy. But you can improve your credit by paying bills on time and keeping your credit card balances low. Money under your pillow? Sorry, kids only.
There's no magic to improving your credit, but there is help, and it's free. Go to creditfairy.org. Brought to you by the Consumer Bankers Foundation, the Leadership Conference on Civil Rights Education Fund, and the Ad Council.
For 10 years now, the Indie Bible has helped thousands of independent artists gain more exposure for their music. The 10th edition features 4,200 publications that will review independent music and 3,400 radio stations that will play independent songs. It also includes hundreds of labels, distributors, and digital download sites. Over 9,000 contacts in all. Included are 50 helpful articles written by music industry experts. The Indie Bible shows musicians where they can get their music reviewed, their songs played, and their CDs sold. For details and to order online, visit www.indiebible.com. From country to rock, hip-hop, reggae, rhythm, blues, alternative, metal, and jazz, we are independent music. Independent music. The Y.
The Y.
Welcome back to Cooper Talk. Do you like this song? This ain't rock. 98 rock in Baltimore.
Let this hit. What is this?
I don't know.
It's just like is. For a second, I thought it was Creed. Then I thought it was like Hall & Oates.
That's what I say. Hall & Oates and Creed.
Hall & Creed.
Private eyes.
Arms.
Private eyes wide open.
Jesus, that's funny.
That's awful. I can't sing. I don't do impressions.
We were talking during the break. You got some really kick-ass guests coming
on. Yeah, it's coming up. I got Andy Kindler next hour. We have Adam McKay is going to reschedule. I have Dom Herrera is going to come in. Mo Mandel, who just got canceled, Free Agents. A lot of people hit me up.
Kindler's going to be great, man.
John Mendoza is going to be on, who's a guy I've loved. He's been around. I mean, the Sklar brothers are going to. I mean, people are coming on. And if you want to see people, I will try to get guests for you because I love you all.
Shoot them an email. Tell them about
Cooper. Exactly. Cooper at 925kyhy.com. And now I got to. Do you drink wine? I know you're.
I do.
Because you're a beer drinker.
I do drink. I'm a kind of a beer drinker, but I'm a beer drinker with food. Like, you don't see me at the bar just drinking beer. I need,
oh, really?
Being from Maryland, crabs and beer is one of my food groups. Beer with barbecue, but not just straight beer.
Well, because you live in Burbank.
Yes.
I got to tell you about a place. One of my sponsors, and they're great.
They're
called D'Argenzio Winery.
D'Argenzio.
Do you know where Costco is?
Right, I know just where it is. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, well, their address is, let me find their address, because it's a great place. I always drive by there. It's so funny, because in Burbank, you never really get addresses. You go, it's on the corner of this and
it's
this.
It's on the corner of this and this.
I'm like,
this.
Go right near Costco. Anyway, the address is 1204 West Burbank Boulevard. It's Burbank, California, 91506. The number is 818, all Burbank numbers, 818-846-VINO. That's 8466. And what this place is, they make wine in their Santa Rosa place, but they bring it down here. And on every Thursday, first of all, from 9 to 5 to Friday, the weekdays, you can go by and try to get wine sales.
All right.
Thursdays from 5 to 10 or 5 to 9. Fridays at 5. Saturdays from 2 o'clock. You can actually get free wine tasting.
Ooh.
And Annabelle's great and have great wine. And they have
Is Annabelle who I ask for? Is that a type
Annabelle
of wine?
Annabelle or Richie?
Ask Annabelle or Richie?
Yeah, Richie's the owner. And people, if you go, tell them, hey, we heard about you on Cooper Talk.
I am going there when I leave here. I am out of wine.
The thing is, it's great because go try to taste it, because Thursday nights, I have another engagement Thursday nights, but Thursday nights is supposed to be so great. My friends go all the time. It's called Wine Down Thursdays.
Wine Down Thursdays.
And they have a nice little tasting room, and they have a guitar player, $5 glasses of wine. They have food trucks, all kinds of food trucks.
Oh,
in front.
Man.
And it's just a great time.
That's happening this Thursday.
And their big wine coming out is the owner, Richie, his wife, her brother was Randy Rhodes, the guitarist.
Oh, Ozzy's guitarist.
So every year they come out with a Cabernet on the big celebrations on Randy's birthday is in the beginning of December, and they have it there, and it's supposed to be an amazing wine. It's the Randy Rhodes Vintage Cabernet. So go down there, people. You know, and if you sit there and hear some guy that sounds just like Schlegel.
Yeah.
Hey, Schlegel!
I'm enjoying the I Don't Know Rhodes Vintage Cabernet.
Exactly. So check out D'Argenzio Winery. It's 1204 West Burbank Boulevard, and tell him Cooper sent you.
See me on Thursday. I'm going to be there completely S-housed on a really good Chardonnay.
But just don't drive.
Oh, I'll walk over.
Do you live that close?
I can. No, but it's close enough to walk.
You can take a cab.
It's a nice 30-minute walk.
Take a cab.
I'll cab over.
I'll
cab there and walk back.
That's always good. That's
I'll
always,
cab there, crawl back.
See, you know what I love? I love because I walk down to downtown to the bars. What I like is I like that when I walk sober, it's downhill.
Yeah.
Because walking sober uphill sucks. But when you're hammered, you don't even notice.
You
like,
got no idea. Your vertigo is all off.
Yeah, you're like, okay. And you're walking like sideways. But I'm always afraid. And the other thing is good. If you're walking drunk and you fall down, if you fall down downhill, you might roll.
Yeah. If you and then you take a header into a wall, brain pops like a grape.
Yeah. Believe me, that happened to me before.
Thursday. Yeah. Come find me there.
Yeah, come on. D'Argenzio Winery. Tom Cooper sent you. So, what were we talking about?
We were just talking about your guests and stuff that we had going on in comedy as far as, me moving out here and talking about.
Do you have any local shows coming up?
I got road work coming up. I'm taking off towards the end of October to head back east to do some shows at the Factory, Helium in Philadelphia, a couple of friends.
I want to do Helium.
Helium's awesome. They have a poor room in Portland I haven't done yet.
I haven't really try to get back on the road at all. I might do, and you probably know this place. It's in the Baltimore area. I'm talking to my friend Joe Matarese. He's been on the show, and he's done
Fixing Joe. Great podcast.
Okay, yeah, so you know Joe.
Oh,
Joe's a very good friend. We went to the same high school, and actually, it's a very funny story. When I moved out west and got out of comedy because I had a pain in the ass wife, Joe took over my apartment right outside New York City in Nutley, New Jersey, and it was like 12 minutes from the tunnel, and so me and Joe are good friends, and he headlines Magoobies. Do you know Magoobies?
Magoobies, I do. That's the other club in town. And it was interesting. Right as the Comedy Factory moved to their new location, Magoobies moved from their old location. Remember a place called
Tracy's?
Bowman?
Yes,
Tracy's.
Tracy's. I used to headline that place.
Well, that was Sully's.
But now, was there a guy
or Magoobies?
Was there a guy, and I don't know if he used to book a guy named Ray Cipolla. Do you know that name?
No, I don't know Ray
Cipolla. He used to book Tracy's. He used to book some colleges. He used to book the Carousel, as I said, in Ocean City, Maryland. He used to book the Dewey Center in Dewey,
Delaware?
Yeah.
Dewey Beach?
That big Dewey town or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
The Rusty Rudder.
Was it the Rusty Scupper or the Rusty Rudder?
Rusty Rudder.
Rusty Rudder.
It was this place that held like 800 people. And he booked that. It was cool. And he booked Irish Eyes in Rehoboth.
Never heard of it. Okay. I know Rehoboth. But yeah. The new Magoobies, where you say Matt Reese works at, that place is real deal. They've got a beautiful new room.
I heard
they
it's
moved
great.
Out they moved out into the county, which was smart because the factory gets like the city folk
right.
And Magoobies gets people from the country and the county. And I mean they got a beautiful new room. The Unger brothers run that. Mark Unger and Andrew Unger run that.
I'm gonna hit them up.
They're good dudes. They're really good dudes.
I told Matt Reese, I said, man, bring me as a feature. He goes, yeah, but he goes, it's changed a lot. He goes, you know, features don't get room. And I said, well, my parents live in Dover, Delaware, which isn't...
That's not a horrible drive.
That's not too far. But
an hour and a half, maybe?
Yeah, and then Matt Reese also said, he goes, yeah, but sometimes, you know, I look... Because Joe's so neurotic.
Neurotic.
I just looked... And it's funny because his wife is a therapist. That's,
yeah,
that's the funniest
which
thing.
It's hilarious.
Like, cure him! Cure him, for Christ's sake!
Fix this man.
But he... Fixing Joe. Actually, I started writing a pilot for him. We had a great idea. And he's like, well, I don't know. I said, hey, dude, I wrote 12 pages for the your pilot, you know.
Soak this up.
A short movie. But no, because actually he goes, sometimes, you know, when I go with an actor, I'll share a room with the feature because I don't like to hang out. And I said, dude, you're over 40. What are you, there's a monster under your bed?
Is somebody going to crawl out of the closet and exactly. Nibble on your toes?
And then when you go to, I just share a room and be like, hey, don't let the bed bugs bite. Oh, good.
But
yeah, so movies, I heard it's cool.
You'd love it. Dude, you should try and get there with Joe if you can.
I would.
The place
fun.
Is a lot of fun. It's run super well.
It's five shows, I think.
I think it's two Friday, two Saturday, one Sunday, okay. Or it's one Thursday, two right. Friday, two Saturday. And it's also depending on the act, too. Sometimes they had, like, Carlos Mencia just came through recently. I think they did, like, six shows for him. They added an extra day. You know what's great is, out of nowhere, Bill Cosby did a show at a big theater down there, I think the Warner Theater in D.C.
Okay.
And he stopped in
wow.
At Magoobies out of nowhere. The way, like, Dave Chappelle or Chris Rock will stop in at the Improv in D.C.
Right.
Cosby out of nowhere just pops in. It was unannounced. It was funny, too, because I heard the MC was like, hey, if you guys don't mind, real quick, I know that the show's over. It was after the headliner, thank God. Cosby was courtesy enough to go after the headliner.
Yeah, it's like, hey, yeah, okay, yeah. Yeah, hey, by the way, what happened
to you? Trying to follow, you know, Mr. Huxtable.
A legend, yeah.
Yeah,
it's
so.
Like, oh, wait. And worse was the headliner was wearing an ugly sweater.
A terrible sweater.
It's like, oh, my God. And now Cosby's like, you stole my act.
Yeah, that's mine. I will bury
you. Because you seem like a little hipster, like a good dresser. Did you ever wear, like...
I'm a redneck.
Are you really?
You have no idea how much of a goober I am.
Are you a redneck?
I am such a heel.
Do you a lot of flannel?
I don't know. Not a lot of flannel, but I tell you what, I never miss an episode of wrestling. I have had moonshine on the regular, and I have shot many animals with
really?
A .38 caliber.
Oh, yeah. So I was going to say, you hunt. So you're actually a redneck.
I'm a full-blown hee-haw.
And you're from Waldorf?
I'm from Waldorf, yeah. Waldorf's pretty country.
Is that like Elkton?
It's like, Elkton's a little more built up. Waldorf's gotten
Wait. Waldorf is worse than Elkton?
Oh, Waldorf used to be the sticks.
Elkton was like, and we performed there. It was like 5-10 minutes from like Baltimore or whatever, like 10 miles from Hee-Haw.
Oh, no.
And Elkton was like, I swear to God, it was awful.
Waldorf is a swamp. I mean, Waldorf is
really?
A swamp town. It's built up now, but when I grew up there, it was a one-lane road in either direction.
Really?
That was it. The only claim to fame in Waldorf was the Stardust. The whole city was built around the Stardust. It was a performance place where you'd have, like, Dolly Parton, Sinatra would do things there. It was like a roadhouse.
Really?
Forever ago. And the city was built around it, and the thing's since gone. But now it's anywhere USA. But, oh,
right.
Yeah, I actually am having difficulty fitting in because of all the
hipsters.
You don't
seem like a neck.
I keep it pretty well hidden. I keep it pretty well hidden. I head back east, my accent pops out.
See, that's funny. I have a little bit of the accent in certain words. People can tell I'm from back east, but I don't really have, like, I mean, when I talk to someone back east, I can tell.
Let me ask you, what do you put on your pancakes? What do you call Aunt Jemima? What do you put on your pancakes?
Syrup.
See, I call it syrup.
Okay, that's fine. Yeah. I call it, but see, in Philly, I say water, but people go water.
Water.
No, you don't say it, Baltimore. That's a big thing. Because it's funny how different demographics, like Philly, they go water. And when I call people, you can just tell. It's like my dad's 87, God bless his soul. And he calls it pasta.
Pasta.
And everyone always says, and I've never, I say, I love the Philadelphia Eagles.
Okay.
But everyone goes, it's the Eagles. It's funny because people call it, but I'm like, I don't know people who say Eagles. And I was like, listen, because then you listen, you go, and you're like, wait, Eagles? Because people send me a joke on how's my friends from North Jersey would say, how's the Eagles?
How's the Eagles
I say Eagles. I don't say Eagles.
No, you don't have much of an accent. You speak pretty clearly.
I've been out here for, you know, 15
years. You lose it after a while, but I remember when I first moved to Baltimore away from Waldorf, and that's two totally separate areas as far as language and sentence structure and alliteration.
Right, right.
Like, Waldorf was straight neck. You sounded Southern. As to where, you know, Baltimore's got that going on down near the ocean type, drinking that natty boo. It's like a real weird New England bastardized Southern. Yeah. It's just this horrible accent as to where Waldorf was just neck. To where I would sometimes, like, if I spend,
they
like,
spent,
two or
like
three
they would speak like that.
Like, hey, we're heading probably on down to the restaurant a little bit if you want to come in.
Do you know what's funny? Because that area, because people think Baltimore, but that area is very neck. Like, my ex-wife is from Spring Grove, Pennsylvania, which is right near York. Okay. And I remember, like, 20, I mean, I've been divorced for 10 years. Like, 20 years ago, or whatever, 15 years ago, no, probably about 15 years ago, the mall, the York Mall, had a NASCAR shop. Now, NASCAR wasn't big back then.
No.
Now it's huge, but they had a
but
NASCAR
that's when it was
store.
Still
Yeah, and I'm like, wow. I go, it's like, and I remember, you know, if you wore a suit somewhere, it's like people go to a funeral in like a t-shirt and jeans. I grew up, you know, go to a funeral in a suit. You know, it's like, well, my t-shirt's black, it's on my jeans. It's like, yeah, you know, it's crazy.
I'm wearing my good Dale Earnhardt hat
exactly.
for Bobby's wake.
So you were, but you don't come across like it.
But I've lost the accent over the years. But if I spend enough time with old like high school, middle school, old skateboarding friends from back east, it comes back, and I'll come back.
Skateboard. Necks?
You have no idea how many skateboard necks there were.
Really?
We would skateboard, but we were still like smoking homegrown pot in the woods. I'm 32.
Okay, so let me think. I'm going to make a...
Forget it at. Throw it at me.
Okay, 32. When you were 12, 20 years ago, you had a tail. You had a tail.
Dude, I had a tail.
Ah, I knew it.
I had a mullet. I had the steps that were shaved
no,
in.
Right no, here. Really?
Oh, I had the steps shaved in right above the sideburns, flat top. But with the big mullet in the back,
really,
dude, I will email
like Joe,
you some
like
photos.
Joe Dirt.
It couldn't be more Joe Dirt.
Oh my God, I knew the
cut
tail.
Off Motley Crue, Dr. Feelgood, Tommy T.
What was
T.
the thing about the tail?
The rat tail was strong.
What was the significance of that? It's like just grow it long. It's like it was, and I did you braid it?
I never braided it.
It's like what did you?
No,
you,
I start braiding it. People ask questions, and they should.
But what, I don't understand it. What was the whole thing?
It was a mullet for people that couldn't commit.
Okay.
Like, it was a mullet that, like, you could tuck in, and it looked like from a distance you look normal.
So if you went to a job, you could put it underneath.
Yeah, you could tuck that little tail in your little hairy, your little redneck Hare Krishna. But
or
I had
you could probably put it up under your hat.
You could tuck
if
the thing up.
If you were a fry cook at
exactly.
Popeye's, you could put it up under your hat.
Yeah, when you're working at the Tasty Freeze.
Isn't it funny they would sit there and give, like, dress code for the Tasty Freeze? Really?
Yeah.
Okay, really? Like anyone
orientation.
Gives a crap. Everyone gives a crap what you're wearing. Like, oh my God, his hair is long. Just put dudes with hair nets. You know, but your hair has to be above the collar unless you have to wear hair. It's like, it's a goddamn Tasty Freeze.
Yeah, it's a Tasty Freeze. Don't have sex with an employee and don't bleed in any of the meat. We're good to go.
Oh, that's great. So this isn't a spot. We're not saying anything about the Tasty Freeze.
No, Tasty Freeze, fine establishment. They kept me they kept me financially above water for many years back
that's
when
good,
I lived in
Waldorf. So, okay, so we're talking. Yeah, we go. We see, that's why you listen to Cooper talk. We're talking about comedy. Now we're talking about his tail. I knew he had a tail.
My backwoods ass.
Okay, so you got your backwoods ass up to do comedy, and then then after a while you got your first paid gig,
yeah.
And then you start going to the Comedy Factory outlet, or how
then
that
I start
work?
Going to the, yeah. So it was I got out of radio, and then let's just say at this point, I
what year was this?
This was I started comedy. My first day in comedy was June 10th, 2004.
Okay, so Blaine and Patton were all gone.
They had
then.
Left. But Blaine had just left, and Patton.
No.
Had, I'm thinking Mark Voice had just left.
Okay, how about Jeff Caldwell? You know him?
I don't know.
Bob Summerby?
I've heard of Bob Summerby, and I didn't know him.
Guy Bob Summerby was a comic. He used to bring all this cereal on stage.
No.
Do bits, but he was a headliner. Very intelligent. He went to Yale or Harvard or wherever Al Gore went. Him, Tommy Lee Jones, and Al Gore were roommates in college.
Really?
Isn't that crazy?
That's a weird group of
dudes.
Yeah,
and he used to write
room.
Speeches for Clinton.
No kidding.
Yeah, and he was big.
And they bring cereal on stage.
Exactly. He had like all these. He'd have like honestly like 50 boxes of cereal.
Yeah.
And he'd just do jokes about cereal, but it was very funny.
So but yeah, I mean if it's not intelligent, it's going to be great. Yeah,
So you were.
So I started in 2004, and
who was around? Jeff Hatz. Was Jeff Hatz there?
No, Chip Franklin was still there. Mark Voice would be there and back. He would bounce between the two.
I heard Chip Franklin does a radio show.
Chip Franklin
San Diego.
Lives out here now.
In
yeah,
San Diego.
Yeah, he works on a conservative talk show station. He used to, the radio station I'm on now, WIYY. He blew up out east on our sister station, WBAL, which was an AM right wing talker. And
okay,
his show exploded out there.
It's funny about him is that's one of my first comics. That's my first comic. And this actually, this is scary. The first two comics I've ever seen live. One was Chip Franklin played my college, and the other saw Joe Piscopo at
the
casino. But Chip, I remember his act was completely different then. He played guitar, he did all this goofy stuff, and then he just started writing.
But and then he got a little Dennis Miller-ish after
a
while.
Yeah, but I saw him, this is years ago, and I was like, wow. So
first
so,
comedian I ever saw was Bobby Slayton.
Really? Bobby Slayton was on the show 2 weeks ago.
Really?
He's great. He just said, Koopa, am I the guest or are you the guest? Come on. He goes, who are your guests? Who's been your guest? I'm better than all of them. Don't worry. Who's it? Yeah, I'm better than him. Anyway, great guest.
So the scary,
best
dude.
Stories. I thought he was much taller. He's like, he's shorter. I'm 5'10". He's like 5'8", 5'9".
He's small, but he's a friggin' pit bull of just energy.
Yeah, he looks, I thought he's like, when I see him on TV, he looks like a great guest.
I have a great story about him that if he heard it, it would bend him out of shape, but I don't care.
But don't tell it on radio.
It's really funny. I'll tell you off air, but it's so funny. Okay. Because you know he's got demons. I have a story about some of his demons.
He had great stories.
They're hilarious. But anyway, so
you saw Slayton at the Improv.
So I saw Slayton at the Improv, and that was one of the first times I was like, good Lord, this is, I've seen comedy, but then I've seen great comedy, because I'd never seen anybody in a live setting
just
before.
Just rip it.
I mean, I've seen people just doubled over, just dying. And it was funny. I saw him, and then the next comedian I saw was Paula Poundstone at like a local church not long ago, and she ate it. And it was weird seeing these two extremes like a month later.
Well, because she ate it because the church people were going, she touched her kids.
She didn't know. Well, this is before, it was before that. Good Lord, that poor woman. But she didn't know what she was getting into. I think someone had sold her on a bill of goods as to what the gig was.
Right.
And she was at like the First Baptist Lady of Our Weeping Heart in Southern Maryland. And she's like, wait, what the F am I doing here? I thought I was doing a college. And like, no, you're doing a Christian Sunday school fundraiser.
Amazing. I love doing the Sunday schools. I have to stay 200 feet away. Yeah. But you know, folks.
Hey there. Keep your hands off the kinder.
So you started doing, so you worked at the Comedy Factory.
Worked at the Comedy Factory.
Now, at this time, where were you in your radio thing?
Radio, it was gone. Radio,
you
I
weren't
almost,
doing radio at all.
No, I had pretty much punched out of radio when I quit and I did that karaoke night we talked about. It would be many years again before I got back behind the mic.
Okay,
and the next time I did, it was as a guest because I was a comic.
Okay,
so the station that I work at now, I grew up listening to. It was always DC 101 in DC, 98 Rock in Baltimore, and HFS.
Okay,
and you wanted to work for one of those three. I wanted to eventually work for them, and so eventually, a few years into it, I start becoming a locally known comic, and you know, the MC gigs become more and more, and eventually 4 years into it, I start to, or 3.5 years into it, I start to feature at the Comedy Factory. First guy I ever featured for was Rob Cantrell, Last Comic Standing, and the MC that night was a guy that was part of the morning show of 98 Rock, and he thought I was funny and had me come on to do just as a guest, like, hey, this is a guy I worked with this weekend, come on. And I did like some characters and some stuff like that. And then just slowly but surely, I became like this this fall guy for 98 Rock, the radio station. They would bring me in for their various shows. If they did a promotion somewhere, they would send me out as like the goofy ass in the costume.
Okay.
Like, I never really worked for them, but I was part of their family.
Okay.
And they would do like a yearly trip to like the Dominican Republic or Mexico, and they would bring me and like two other comics as like comic relief. We basically just for 7 days perform nonstop, just acting like assholes all day long and having people laugh at us. But then eventually I told them, you know, it's like, you guys know I have a radio background. If you ever need somebody to, like, you know, fill in on a weekend, or if somebody ever calls out, you know, I can come in and run a board or something like that. And the program director, Dave Hill, is a great dude. He's like, yeah, if there's ever an opening, I will. And eventually there was, and I started filling in on weekends, and then they had their night guy leave in 2009. And then early 2010, they brought me on. They made me.
I want to get a job there. I'll move to Baltimore. I want to live in Baltimore.
Awesome.
I want to move to Baltimore. But
the station's great, man.
But now you don't do a lot. You play mostly music.
Yeah, it's a music and talk program. But it's mostly music. I do five breaks an hour. Two breaks are long ones. By long, nothing the quality of this. I mean, by long, I mean like 3 to 4 minutes.
Okay.
And the other three are quickies. That was that.
I don't even really
this.
Do breaks. I mean, I said, you know, I don't need to.
But you'll take a break for a sponsor or something like that.
I'll talk,
when I say a break, I mean, I'm literally taking a 3 minute break to do some character or some bit or just I'll do a movie review or whatever.
How do you figure out your playlist?
It's predetermined. We have a music director. I'm going to let you guys, the listeners of Cooper Talking, on a dark secret in radio. Whenever you request a song, it never gets played. Heads up. We haven't taken a live request in forever. If you ever hear anybody on K-Rock, on 98 Rock, DC 101, play a song that they requested. Hey, this is John from Burbank. Can you play that new Social D? Absolutely. Here you go. It's K-Rock. Guess what? That guy was recorded hours ago, maybe days ago, and they saved him in a bank.
Oh, man.
When you call in, they'll just save you.
But if you send Cooper Talk, Cooper at 925KYHY.com.
Immediately.
Cooper at 925KYHY.com. Send me an email. I'll say your name on air. What do you think about it? I'll go, hey, like this kid Brian Hurtado sent me, he added me on Twitter. I think he's like 16. I don't know. But he sent me a thing on Twitter. He added me and he goes, yeah, I just wanted to tell you, I really like your show and I finally got a Twitter account. I think his parents, he's sitting with some lady. I don't know if it's his mom, but that's why I said Brian Hurtado.
Hey, Mom, I'm talking to this guy on the radio.
I'll say his name and like I get emails from people sometimes. They don't put their names. And the thing is, I respond to him. They go, hey, thanks for listening to Cooper Talk. They don't respond to me back. They don't add me on Twitter. No one adds me on Twitter. Twitter.com/CooperTalk. Add me. I have 80 listeners. I write gems of comedy on Twitter.
Follow this man
on
Twitter.
But they go on Facebook. 25,000, 35,000 listeners a week, 80 followers on Twitter. What is that, people? You enjoy my guests? Put me on Twitter. Tweet me. I want to tweet. I'm Coco for Cuckoo Puffs. I don't even know.
Tweet this man. Make this guy retweet it.
Where can people find your info?
They can find me funnyjustin.com. It's also Twitter/funnyjustin, which I had to buy the Funny Justin moniker because justinschlegel.com is too hard for people to figure out.
I have coopertalk.net.
See, that's easy. Yeah. Coopertalk.net, easy to remember.
But my website's not up yet. I'm getting
Funny Justin,
soon.
Funnyjustin.com and Twitter.com.
I like your website.
Funny Justin.
Who designed
that? That's a friend of mine, Vince Moore, who's actually my assistant producer of my radio show.
That's a really cool site.
He's a good dude. Yeah, he does them on the
You need your calendar update, though.
But the cat's all me. That's my problem. He gave me the tools to update it, and I just don't.
Okay. What about your cat?
They're beautiful. Dr. Fuzzlekins, Professor Whiskers.
You have two cats?
I have two cats.
But only one's on the website.
Only one. Just the big one.
Does that guy the other one jealous?
The other one, she's real sly. She's real slick. She likes to hide in the shadows.
She doesn't want to be, like, known?
No. She's the Mrs. X of the whole deal. She's the mystery. She's the outlier.
How old are they?
Dr. Fuzzlekins is the big fat guy. He's 8 years old. Professor Whiskers, she's the small one. She's 4.
I might get a cat. My cats died.
Oh, man.
No, it was a year and a half. But they were 15 or 14 and 12.
I had a cat live to be 22.
See, they died. I think it's because I changed their food.
Oh.
I don't know. That wouldn't happen.
You changed it from Iams to like stroganoff.
Yeah,
like,
exactly. They were getting old. And they had a good life.
You got pets now?
What's that?
You got pets now?
No, I'm thinking I might be getting a cat. I don't know. I'm not
sure. Adopt a cat. Go to the SPCA.
I adopted cats, but 15 years. I mean, what happens when I die in 8 years? Then the cat's going
to
be
sitting
there.
The cat will wander the earth and tell your story.
What's a cat? Yeah, a cat will say, the cat can't get on radio.
The cat will wander the earth.
He says, meow, meow, meow.
The cat will jump on my program every now and then because I broadcast out of a home studio.
And does he go, meow?
Dude, the big fat one, Fuzzlekins, is loud as hell, so the thing will jump up in my lap and I'll be right in the middle of, you know, hey, that's a commercial free Rock Block Nickelback coming. I'm like,
did you move them across country?
Oh, yeah. In the car with me.
Okay, in the car, because that's crazy.
It was brutal. It was either ship them out. It was ship them out, and I read all these horror stories.
You have to sedate them. You got to put them on, and they sit in the luggage section, and it's hot, and there's no water.
It's either hot as hell or totally freezing. And I read these horror stories after, after listening to this this program on NPR about, like, I'm not sure what airline was it, but they had like a 35% fatality rate of animals shipped across country, and then they would bring you like the cages, like, all right, got a schnauzer, Spot, didn't make it.
There's nothing worse than when you see the luggage rack, and then all of a sudden you see a dead cat.
There's a horrible smell.
It's like, wait a second, this cat's been dead since Tacoma, Washington.
Yeah, it died over the Grand Canyon.
That doesn't make sense. You wouldn't fly from Baltimore to Tacoma, Washington.
Unless I was making a horrible connecting flight.
Exactly.
I put the cat on a connecting flight.
Exactly.
I take it direct, and it's got three connections.
You have your luggage, but we lost your cat.
Yeah.
And your cat likes the place he got stuck at, so he's like, screw this. I'm never
making it to Burbank. I love living in Seattle. But yeah, I couldn't do it, so I was like, instead of flying out and paying to get your animals out there, it was like $800 per animal. So I'm like, screw it, I'm just going to throw them in the car with me, get a small litter box, put him in the back seat and just stop whenever they start flipping out and clawing like they got to go to the bathroom.
Well, I think they're good. I mean, they're cats. And
they slept the whole time.
Yeah. It's like, you know, like they're cats.
And then when I would go to a hotel, I would just kind of corral them into their little box, and then I'd sneak them in under cover of darkness into the Super 8 and then let them run around the hotel room. Yeah. In the morning, you'll fish him out from under the bed with cat treats, back in the car, and drive for another 14 hours.
My one cat was 24 pounds, man. But
that's a big cat.
But he could jump. And I always remind him, like, when he would jump, like, his body would get all crazy. He looked like David Lee Roth when he jumped.
Like,
he looked
like a chubby David Lee Roth.
Yeah, he had a little, he was big boned. He had a gut, but he was very thin. He had a very young looking face. He looked
this cat's all blubber.
He was sort of like Charlene Tilton from Dallas. She's very heavy, but she has a very young looking face.
The tiny cherubic face with a John Candy
bottle. My other one was Archie. His birthday was the same day as mine. He was cool. He just chill. When me and my ex-wife lived in San Diego, we would sometimes we lived in a loft, and we were on the fourth floor, so it was like the walkway went around like sort of a hotel, and there was beams that would go from side to side. We let them out and they hang out. Archie would sit there, nuts out of hell, would walk and sit there and walk into a, he'd walk out on the beam like four, and just sit in the middle of this beam four stories up.
God, like, did that not just give you a heart attack?
Yeah, I'm like, I come back, and it's like, and I figure, well, if he falls, I hope they do land on their feet.
I hope so. His feet are going to blow clean through his spine, but I have a balcony that's two stories up, and they'll go out there, and I'll see one, like, put their head through the bars just to look down, and my heart will seize up, and I'll run out there, like, okay, falls, Ken's back.
We in San Diego, on our back balcony, this was at the front door, on the back balcony, we put I put chicken wire up, so because there's little things so they couldn't try to get out. But it's like, but they're crazy. Cats are crazy.
Oh yeah, they have the big one thinks he's still a kitten and will jump up on a table and knock everything off of it and regularly fall over out of a chair. He's so effing fat, but he thinks he's 8 pounds, but he's 22 pounds. And he just falls over, knocks stuff over all the time. They're not as graceful as they would lead you to believe.
But they can jump.
Oh yeah, both of them can jump, and I'm baffled. Sometimes I will wake up in the middle of the night and I'll hear like this, and I'll look, and his fat ass has somehow gotten above my cupboards, and I have no idea how he gets up there.
That's like one time the cat, I couldn't find the cat. I'm like, where's the cat? I'm like, what the hell? And so the cat had actually, where the way the door opened from the bathroom was like this, the cat had like jumped up on the door, and that's the last part you look. You're not looking up on doors, and I'm like, and then I finally found the cat when I was like, what the hell? I pulled the door, and the cat fell and hit the ground, and I went, okay.
And there you are. Like, okay, now I have to ask you this because I saw this the minute you came out to greet me at the KUIHY studios. Your shirt is a 10 out of 10. Are you a wrestling fan? Endear yourself to me forever.
I saw it on sale for $2.99.
Son of a bitch!
I like wrestling. Oh. I mean, I like the Ric Flair. I like the Jimmy Superfly Snooker.
For your listeners, he's got the greatest Andre the Giant shirt on right now. Classic Andre.
King of the Ring.
King of the Ring. Andre, we're talking early 80s, as svelte as he ever got Andre.
And if you add me on Facebook, facebook.com/CooperTalk, you can see it because I take a picture. You know, I post a picture of under my mobile clothes every episode. And that's what I'm talking about.
You're going to dig this shirt. You're going to look for it.
It's a cool shirt. I like it. I got it for $2.99.
Did you grow up watching wrestling?
I sit there. It's funny. I remember I told this story a while ago. I was coming back from when I started out doing comedy, like 4 years, 5 years. I was down doing the comic strip in Fort Lauderdale.
Okay.
And I fly back into Philly, and it was like weekend of WrestleMania.
Oh, wow.
So I see Hacksaw Duggan walking around with like his 2x4 is like a pool case. Like that's his carry-on.
Okay.
And I see like Snuka walking around. Like these guys are all like Macho Man. They're all like getting off this airplane. It's like I'm in the Philly airport. I just see them because I'm waiting for my luggage. All these wrestlers.
Just a parade of badasses.
And we used to watch. I remember the early WrestleManias. We used to sit there and we would hang out and we would watch it and we'd have a blast. And we, you know, me and my friends would do the All-Star Wrestling. Greg the Valentine, Figure 4 Leg Lock. We'd actually put each other in
front of the pool. Oh, yeah, start throwing each other, start powerbombing each other in the pool.
It was awful, but
suplex your brother through a coffee table. This is getting back to my redneck roots right here. This is like how excited I am about it. We would watch it when I was like 8, 9 years old, and my dad would get so drunk and excited about the match that he'd be like, I'll tell you what, if Andre pulls this out, you guys got the day off of school tomorrow. If he somehow wins this sporting engagement, because this is a real match of sporting combat, there is no predetermined outcome, son.
That's what I always would love is like you'd be watching it on TV. You'd be watching it on TV, and they go, okay, let's say Bob Backlund is fighting
Cross-face chicken wing.
Someone else for it's a championship match, but yet like 3 weeks from now, the big match, Bob Backlund defends his championship. So you know he already lost the match you're watching because he's already defending his championship 3 weeks away.
Yeah, like you got to tune in to SummerSlam in 3 weeks when Bob Backlund defends his title. But tonight his title's on the line against. Like, wait a minute, you just gave away. Well, what was great is that you always knew back when we were watching wrestling in the day that it was always Andre the Giant versus Rodney O'Sullivan, who you'd never heard of.
Or Johnny Rods.
Or you'd have like a, you know, Hulk Hogan or the Macho Man would come out and he would fight against, you know,
Chico Estrada. Remember him?
Chico Estrada, yes.
Chico Estrada.
You'd have Superfly Jimmy Snuka taking on some dude in the ring that was, there's a comic named Andy Peters who has one of the funniest jokes about this. They called him Jobbers.
Okay.
About how, you know, you'd have Jake the Snake Roberts come out and fight, you know, Whisper and Dan Spivey, who no one had ever heard
of. That's funny.
And you knew that guy was going to get his ass whooped.
Yeah, or Leaping Lenny Poffa.
Oh, that who was the brother of the Macho Man.
Right. Leaping Lenny Poffa. He's in the ring. And I loved it. We used to watch it. And the British Bulldogs and Ted DiBiase.
Oh, the Million Dollar Man and Virgil.
I always wanted, like, I never aspired to be a wrestler. I always wanted to be like Jimmy Hart.
To be the mouthpiece?
Not like Blassie, hey, a pencil neck geek. So not Bobby the Brain Heenan.
I loved Heenan.
He was good, but I would want to be like the Jimmy the Hart. Or I want to be like the Mean Gene Oberlin.
Oh, dude, Mean Gene was great. Mean Gene was best announcers ever. Jimmy Hart, and I loved so many classic manager, Paul Bearer. Remember the Undertaker, Paul Bearer? Of Undertaker.
You know what, man? We got a minute and a half.
All right, dude.
We're going to wrap it up.
So find me, funnyjustin.com, twitter.com/funnyjustin. And
your radio station?
Radio station, 98online.com.
Now, people out here in L.A., you're 7 o'clock.
It's 7 to midnight Eastern, so it's 4 to 9 Pacific. And you can listen online.
And maybe I'll be on there sometime.
Dude, we're gonna have Coop come on, hang out sometime. We'll cross-promote this bad boy.
And people, and you can also, you know, here's the deal. I'm doing a whole big reconstruction of Cooper Talk. I'm going to be updating the website. I'm going to be putting all my stuff on the iTunes. I only have 12 past episodes right now. I'm upgrading all that in the process of that. If you do want to find some past episodes, we got the Paul Provenza, the Todd Glass, the Eddie Pepitone, Dave Coulier, Carlos Alazraki, a bunch of those past episodes. Go to iTunes and just type in Cooper Talk, one word. So if you type in a space, you get like Anderson Cooper. Type in Cooper Talk, one word, you get some 12 of those episodes. Listen to them. Listen to me every week.
Go to spread the word, man.
Yeah, spread the word.
Forward to a friend.
Go to Dr. Genzio Winery. Go check them out because it's fun. It's right down there on Burbank Boulevard, 818-846 Vino.
Hang out with me Thursday. I'll be there.
Hang out with them Thursday. And remember, people, listen to me. I'll be at Flappers this Friday night at 9:30. Flappers, and I'll be at the C Word in the Comedy Store in the Belly Room Monday at 8 o'clock. And every other Thursday, look for my article, Cooper Talk in the Toluca Times. I'm Steve Cooper. I want to thank you, Justin.
Thank you, bud.
And hit me up at Cooper at 925KYHY.com. I'm Steve Cooper. And remember, I'm only as hip as my guests. Have a wonderful day.